Today's date is February 15th, 2011. The time is 9:02 in the morning. We have with us today Senator Pasfan, Senator Meyer, Senator Geisel, and myself, Wilikowski. Today we have three bills before us. The first is Senate Bill 26, which would set a special registration fee for vehicles that run on alternative fuels. The second is Senate Concurrent Resolution 2, which we heard last week. It proposes changes to the uniform rules to create a new position, presiding officer pro tempore. Final bill is Senate Bill 61, which makes corrective amendments to the Alaska statutes. We'll begin with Senate Bill 26, sponsored by Senator McGuire. We heard this bill originally on January 27th, and since then I've worked with the sponsor and Division of Motor Vehicles on a committee substitute. The new version of the bill is version / X, as in Xavier. Do I have a motion to adopt version X as our working document?
Sure. I move that we bring the committee substitute for Senate Bill 26 / X version before the committee.
And I'll object for discussion purposes. And we have Senator McGuire's office here before us. Genevieve, if you could put yourself on the record and explain the differences between this bill and the original. And we have Senator Kukesh here.
Good morning.
Welcome.
And Senator Kukesh. For Senator McGuire's office.
Just once, we just started on CS for Senate Bill number 26, Senator Kukesh.
Okay, the changes in this bill are it imposes a minimum registration fee of $20. Originally, we had taken out the whole registration fee, but this way DMV gets some back for license plates and they don't lose all of the money that they were originally going to lose. It leaves in the municipal taxes originally imposed in statute. There were 16 communities infected, and they talked to us, and they wanted to be left in, so we left the municipal taxes in and just took out state. On page 2, line 4, it changed from must be acquired from the manufacturer on or after October 1, 2010, to it must be a model year of 2010 or newer, because the DMV has no way of knowing when a car was bought. It's not on anything that they have. On page 2, line 16, hybrids was added and their definition. And on the bottom, changed effective date from this act takes effect immediately to this act takes effect January 1, 2012, so the DMV has time to install everything and teach all of their employees. And it added a sunset, December 31, 2015 for hybrids, and December 31, 2019 for the rest of the bill. Those are the changes.
Okay, thank you for that explanation. Any questions by the committee? Can you just show me the part where we had an issue last time with municipalities, and can you show me where, just in what line that was?
Well, it was in the title.
Okay.
And so it was registration fees and taxes. So we took out and taxes because that was municipalities.
Okay, so we'll need a title change.
Yes.
Amendment. Okay.
Yes.
And just procedurally, do we need that at this point, or can we just have you checked with the advisor? Have you checked with Ledger Legal about when, at what point in time we pass that along, or does that just go to the next committee?
I'm not positive. I can check on that.
Okay. Okay. My staff is advising me that she thinks we're fine. There's no need to change it. We can just do it when we go to the floor.
Okay.
Okay. Other questions? All right. Seeing none. Do we have anyone from DMV here? Okay, we have someone on the line from DMV. Is that Whitney Brewster? Okay, looks like we have Stacy Oates. Stacy, are you there?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Stacy Oates. I'm with the Division of Motor Vehicles. I'm the administrative officer.
Yeah, if you could, do you have any testimony you want to give, or are you just available for questions, Stacy?
I'm just available for questions.
Okay. And do you have any sense on what the fiscal note on this bill would be, Stacy?
We just got the revised version late last night, so that added the hybrids, and so I really don't have a sense at this point. I don't think that we have a tremendous number of hybrids, although there are more and more Priuses out there. So I would have to get some statistics on that to determine what the fiscal note would be.
Okay. And do you have any, support the bill, or are you neutral on the bill?
We're neutral on the bill.
Any questions for DMV?
If I could just ask, that whole issue of the municipalities, is that problem believed to be solved by the department now?
Did you get that, Stacey?
Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't sure that that was directed at me. Yes, I believe that that takes care of it.
Okay. Any other questions for DMV? Okay, seeing none. Thank you, Stacey. If you could hold on the line for a few minutes, we have, looks like, one or two people who want to testify in this. We have David Tulaskis. Is he online? Is he wanting? He is signed up to testify.
Yes, correct, Chairman. Thank you. Only available if questions were asked.
Okay, thank you. And Dan Frakes as well. Looks like questions only. Are there any questions? And I think Mr. Tulaskis is from General Motors. Any questions for Mr. Tulaskis? Okay, seeing none. I'll remove my objection from backslash X. Is there any further objection to adopting backslash X? Okay, I see none. We don't have an updated fiscal note. This this does have a referral to finance where they deal with the fiscal implications. I don't think it's a very significant fiscal note. Is there, does the committee wish to move the bill at this time? Is there, what's the will of the committee?
Just a question, Mr.
Yes,
Chairman.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, you mentioned you don't think it has much of a fiscal note. Do you have ballpark?
I guess when this first started out, we didn't think there was going to be any significant. It was going to be very significant at all. I think I think the testimony at the last hearing was it was maybe less than 100 cars or so. We have added hybrids, and that's a recent change. And so, if the committee wants to wait till we get the updated fiscal note, we can certainly do that.
Though, Mr. Chairman, your point is correct. It does go to finance, where they worry about the finances more than us. But I think it does impact our policy decision too. If this is a very expensive program, but I don't want to hold up the bill if it's just a minor thing. So,
I tend to I'm a little hesitant without the fiscal note myself, Mr. Senator Meyer. I wanted to move the bill. I mean, it was the hope to move the bill. We unfortunately couldn't get an updated fiscal note. So why don't we hold off on the bill at this point, and then when get us the fiscal note as quick as you can, and we'll try to move it out as soon as you get it, if that's the will of the committee. Okay, thank you. So we'll set that bill aside for now. Next up, we have Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 2, which proposes amendments to the Uniform Rules of the Legislature. We heard this resolution last week. It's sponsored by Senator Davis. Senator Davis, welcome back. Do you have any final thoughts on SCR 2 that you'd like to share with the committee?
No, I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank the committee for hearing the bill and bringing it back in such a timely manner. It's an issue that's very dear to my heart, and I would like to see it move to the next committee if possible. There is no fiscal note on the bill. It would actually be left up to the presiding officers to decide what duties would be assigned to this new position.
Okay. Yeah, I do see there is a zero fiscal note with the bill. Is there any questions for the bill sponsor? Let's see, we have backslash M before us. What's the will of the body?
We move it.
Senator Passman, is there a motion to move?
Yes, I would move that we move the CS for Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 2, version backslash M, from this committee to the next committee of referral, with individual recommendations, and I believe without fiscal note or zero fiscal note.
Yeah, it's got a zero fiscal note. Is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, the bill is moved. Let's take a brief at ease. Make sure we have the correct bill. We'll now consider Senate Bill 61, which makes corrective changes to existing statutes. It's sponsored by the Senate Rules Committee at the request of the Legislative Council. Here to present the bill is Catherine Kurtz, an attorney with our legal department. Ms. Kurtz, if you could put yourself on the record and walk us through the bill.
Good morning. My name is Catherine Kurtz, and I am the Assistant Revisor of Statutes with the Legislative Affairs Agency. This is Senate Bill 61. It's the revisor's bill, and we prepare a revisor's bill almost every year to do a number of things. We are directed to do this by statute. The Legislative Affairs Agency takes it to the Leg Council, and then it comes to you. Under AS 0105036, the purpose of this bill is to correct or remove deficiencies and obsolete provisions, as well as conflicts in the statutes, and to generally improve the statutes. So it's a fix-it bill. It's a cleanup bill. Throughout the year, we go through a regular process of reviewing the titles. We actually read the blue books and check for errors. So do our legal editors, the folks at LexisNexis, who are currently the publishers of the statutes. And we hear from departments, members of the public, and other people who are trying to alert us, hey, we found an error. Is this a problem? We don't fix every problem in the statute, in the revisor's bill. We're a policy-neutral agency, and we try and keep this bill policy-neutral. This is just to clean things up. So if you have something that's a real conflict or a problem in the statute, but it requires a policy decision to fix it, we try and steer clear of that. That's something that's better done in a substantive bill, not the revisor's bill. Something else about the revisor's bill that's unique is that we cover a number of subject areas, just as you do in an appropriations bill. And in fact, there's a constitutional exception to the single subject rule, which ordinarily prevails, that says you can cover more than one subject in a bill revising the statutes. So that's why you see so many topics in this particular bill. You'll have a sectional in front of you that covers every single section. What I'm going to try and do this morning for you is kind of group these changes into a few broader areas. There are 46 sections, and fully 20 of them deal with a single change. So the biggest thing that's happening in the revisor's bill this year is relating to the administrative director of the Alaska court system, formerly known as the administrative director of courts. Now, that's a constitutional position. The Constitution establishes that the court system will have this office, and it doesn't establish a title for it. So it used to be the practice to call this position the administrative director of courts, and then at some point the court system changed its usage to of the Alaska court system. So we followed that, and in recent years that's what we've been using, but there's still a number of statutes that have other designations for this position. So what we're doing in this bill is cleaning those up, making them uniform, so every time we refer to that administrative director, it says administrative director of the Alaska court system. So that's 20 sections of the bill right there. Another change is relating to the United States Soil Conservation Service, and the name of that has changed to the United States Department of Agriculture Natural Resources Conservation Service. It's the same entity. They've simply renamed it within the federal government. So we've updated our statutes to reflect that change. That's three sections. That change brings up a couple of types of issues that come up in the revisers bill. Don't worry, I'm not going to do every single of the 40 sections. Organizations and entities and government departments sometimes change their names. And when they do that, we like to keep up with them. So, for example, sections 4 and 5 are name changes. The American Standards Association became American National Standards Institute. And the Funeral Services Examining Boards added international in the front. The other thing that happens often that we need to address in the revisers bill is a revision in the federal statutes, where they've moved federal statutes around. Now, Alaska is kind of unique in that we do a lot of revising up front. Part of my job is to review bills that the bill drafter has drafted before we send them to you. So not only is your bill drafted by an attorney, but it always is looked at by another attorney before it leaves our office. That helps us catch a lot of problems before they ever get into the books, before they're enacted. But the federal government tends to do things more after the fact, and so they revise their statutes, and they can be pretty significant. They renumber, they reword things, they do a lot of cleaning up afterwards. And when they do that, they renumber things. So, for instance, in Section 46, there was a section of the USC that was renumbered, and we've just updated to reflect that. Sheldon Jackson College, that's another change in this revisers bill. It is not going to function as a college anymore. It's finally become clear that the board is winding up its activities and disposing of assets, taking care of debts. So what this bill does is simply remove the references to Sheldon Jackson College. There's one that has to do with the University Board of Regents consulting with them, and there are a couple in the Secondary Education Commission board. And so since you can't get a student representative from Sheldon Jackson College anymore, we're just removing those references. Obsolete date references. There are some things in the statute, for instance, sections 19 and 42 say you will adopt regulations by a specified date. One of them is December 31st, 1999. Another one is July 1st, 2002. So those dates are long gone. We've gone ahead and pulled those dates out of the statutory language. They're not needed anymore. And then we arrive sort of miscellaneous. There are other improvements, obsolete provisions, and errors that we're trying to fix. And I guess at this point, I would just ask whether there are any questions about any of those specific sections. I'd be happy to explain.
I'll just jump right in. I have a few questions. Page 2, line 6 and 7. You changed. Yes. Is there a definition for vulnerable adult?
Yes, there is a definition of vulnerable adult, and this is tracking. This is something that we missed when that was when the switch to the uniform vulnerable adult language was made. But the definition is clear that that's what they're talking about. The vulnerable adult is the defined term at this point, so that's updating something where we missed it before.
So is this a would that be considered a substantive? I mean, it seems like it's a criminal. I'm assuming that's a criminal section. Is that correct?
No, it's in Title 8. Shall report incidents.
So that's just a requirement for like a social worker to report incidents or something like that?
Yes.
Okay. And so right now the current law says shall report incidents of harm or assault suffered by an elderly person or disabled adult. It would seem that you're limiting the definition a little bit to someone could be elderly but not vulnerable.
You know, I think you have to look at the context of the whole sentence, which also says, as required by AS 47.24. And 47.24 doesn't talk about elderly persons and disabled adults anymore. It instead talks about vulnerable adults. That's the term that's used. And then it goes on to define vulnerable adults. I don't have it in front of me, but I could get it, I believe, as essentially elderly persons and disabled adults. So, yes, I see someone reaching for a blue book back there. That's great. Let's take a look at that definition.
Okay, while Senator Passavant is looking that up, Section 4, page 2, lines 14 and 17, you're changing American Standards Association to American National Standards Institute.
Yes.
Is that, are you just, has the name of that organization changed?
Yes.
Okay. So no other changes there.
Correct. Okay.
Same with page 3, line 1, the name is just changed.
Yes, that's correct. The organization has changed its name.
Okay. I see Senator Passavant has found the section. Going back to section 3, page 2, line 6, what, anything?
Yeah, it's, Mr. Chair, it deals with licensed professional counselors, and it talks about a person licensed under this chapter shall report incidents of harm or assault suffered by. It says currently in an elderly person or disabled adult, and they would change that phrase to the vulnerable adult. And they say as, and then it says as required by AS 47.24. And so I haven't looked at that, but I assume.
Yeah, so we need to look at that too. The 47, pardon me, through the chair, 47.24.010.
Thank you, Senator Passavant. I know. Yeah. Yeah. Good thing he's not billing us for
this. Free legal advice.
Yeah. And again, this is a shift that in the sectional it talks about the session law from 1994.
So why would you change this? Why would you change this?
To be consistent with the section it's referring to, because it's the language of this statute that we're changing is actually referring over to 4724, and the language that is used in 4724. Is this vulnerable adult term? I should say
Anyway, it's under 4724.010A. They have a classification of the following persons who, in the performance of their professional duties, have reasonable cause to believe that a vulnerable adult suffers from abandonment, exploitation, abuse, neglect, or self-neglect shall not later than 24 hours report the belief to the Department of Central Information Service for vulnerable adults. And so that seems to be what, and then I assume that in here is the licensed professional counselors.
Excuse me, the what? The Lexis professional counselors?
Licensed professional
counselors. Licensed professional counselors. 47. Yes, okay. 47, so that's the section that's being referred to. Those two relate. 0829-200B refers to 4724. 4724-010, which Senator Passavant has just quoted, is the material that connects to that. And then that term, vulnerable adult, is defined in 4724-900, paragraph 16. It means a person 18 years of age or older who, because of physical or mental impairment, is unable to meet the person's own needs or to seek help without assistance. So the reason we're suggesting that change is to make the usage consistency between 08 and 4724, which it is referring to. That said, there's nothing, we think it's an issue and should be consistent. However, I'm certainly happy to pull that section out of the bill if it's at all controversial. If there is a policy question that you would prefer to address in a substantive bill or deal with in some other way, we'd be happy to take that out.
I don't have any problem with it. I just wanting to make sure we understand what we're getting ourselves into.
That's
yes,
great.
Senator Giesel.
I would advocate for the term vulnerable adult. It is the contemporary term, and you can see it's a much broader definition than elderly or disabled. it includes a young person, age 18 or older, who has disabilities and is vulnerable.
That's actually a good point. Vulnerable adult. So we're actually expanding it, aren't we?
I think it was expanded in 1994 when the terminology in 4724 changed. I think it was inadvertent that this section in Title 8 wasn't updated at that time in 1994. So that's what we're trying to catch up.
But right now, let's say someone, a licensed social worker, witnessed harm or assault on someone who's 40 years old, who's an adult. They're vulnerable. They couldn't technically be prosecuted, or they wouldn't be required, I guess, to report that. Whereas if we change, I would just say this is a substantive change. It's probably a good change, but.
Well, if it's a substantive change, then it needs to come out. So.
Yes, Senator Giesel.
Actually, I would argue that it's not a substantive change. That was made in the definition in the previous statute that was just read. Here, we're simply bringing it up to date and coordinating the terms. I think that change was made in the definition.
That's the thing, because 4724, thank you, Senator Giesel, already talks about reports of harm as required. The reports that are required under 4724 relate to a vulnerable adult, so it's reflecting that.
Yeah.
And it's, I think the distinction here is whether you see 0829-200B as imposing the duty, or 4724-010 as imposing the duty, and 0829 simply picking that up. And in drafting, I think it was the latter. The following persons who, in the performance of their professional duties, have reasonable cause to suspect shall report. So there's the duty in 4724. This says you shall report as in 4724, which is now broader, encompassing vulnerable adults instead of just the elderly persons or disabled adults. So, yes, it's broader, but that's because 4724 is broader, so we're trying to track what's already happened over there.
Senator Passman.
In looking at the language of 4724.010A1, mm-hmm. is a licensed professional counselor within the classification of other licensed health care provider as set forth in 010A1? Because I think that's, mm-hmm. if it's consistent, then I would assume that AS0829, meaning licensed professional counselors, is included within other licensed healthcare providers as set forth in 010A1. But if they're not, then there's,
I'm not
that's what
sure
I'm asking.
The definition, because that term, a licensed healthcare provider, isn't included in the definitions for 4724. It's not under licensed. It's not under healthcare provider. So I think that's something that you need to look at and interpret whether a licensed healthcare provider would include that licensed professional counselor.
Okay. Other questions on that section? Let's move on. Page 4, if you could. Section 8, you had a number of changes to the courts, to the Alaska court system, and just want to clarify for the record, there are a number of changes. I think that's the one that you're changing in 20 sections, you said. That's not, nowhere in any of those sections could that be interpreted to mean federal courts, could it?
No, the administrative director of the Alaska court system is a position that is anticipated in the Alaska Constitution. Yeah.
Just want to clarify that for the record, because we are changing it in a lot of different places.
Yeah, because it's preceded by administrative director, I don't think courts in that section can be read as federal.
Okay. Page 4, just curiosity, why mathematics instead of math?
Because it's the only place in the statutes that the word math is used. Everywhere else, it's mathematics.
Okay.
Consistency.
Okay. page 7, You're changing 1605060 to 1620060 on line 13.
Mm-hmm. And that was an error that crept in. That was the executive order error. Up until then, until the executive order, it had referred to 1620060. In the executive order, all of a sudden there's this 05. And if I'm remembering correctly, that actually used to be a statute, but it doesn't relate, it doesn't fit this subject. So that's taking it back to what it was previously and what makes sense.
Okay. Page 11, lines 19 and 20, you're defining school district. Are you giving it a different definition there?
No. That definition, I think, was repealed. Yes. The former definition, 1403.126, that was repealed. So by keeping that statutory reference, people are being sent to something that has a repeal line on it. What we did is take the text of former 1403.126 and put it in to this definition.
What is AS 2196? What is that section pertaining to?
I don't remember offhand. Yeah, you are. Thank you very much for. I have
2196070.
Insurance tax education credit. So.
It is not in the 2000. There is not a 2196. In the 2008 version, so it may be.
Oh my goodness.
2196.
2196070F1 is in. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's in the 2010 Title 6 or Volume 6.
And we don't have the 2010 up here. So we.
Shall I bring it?
I'll read it.
A taxpayer, it's called the Insurance Tax Education Credit. A taxpayer is allowed a credit against the tax due under 2109-210 or 2166-110.
I'm just trying to get generally what that section
for
does.
Cash contributions accepted for direct instruction, research, and so forth, for secondary school level vocational education, for vocational education courses, for a facility by a nonprofit, public or private. College. So school district.
Was this the bill that allowed companies or organizations to contribute to schools? And
yes.
I think that was Senator Meyer's bill. Yeah, tax. Okay.
Yeah.
So that was just added in 2010. And we referenced school district there. We referenced it to a section that no longer existed.
Yeah, that's the change that's being made in the revisor's bill, is you're referring to a section that no longer exists. Actually, the statute originally dates from 1994, although it was amended in 2010. So there's a new subsection E that's just coming into effect.
Was that your intent, Senator Meyer?
No, that was not the intent.
any questions? Okay.
So we referenced a school district that didn't exist?
No, I assume that when that particular definition was added to the statute, that section did exist, but it was subsequently repealed. And so once it's been repealed, when you look in the current statute book, all that it says is repealed. It doesn't give you the old definition. So to make it easier for people to figure out what that definition was, we just took the text and put it in.
Sounds like a good change.
I think my last one is on page 20. Line 4, if you could just explain what you're doing there.
Yes, that is an interesting one. That's another one where the federal statutes have been revised. When this was initially enacted, it simply referred to the Interstate Commerce Act. So long, long ago, before Pam Finley or I were there, a reviser helpfully added a citation to the federal statutes where that Interstate Commerce Act is found. Now, since then, the Interstate Commerce Act has been revised and spread out so that we can't update that site. Ordinarily, if it had just moved, I would change the reference and put in a different span reference, but it's now all over the place, so we couldn't figure out what sections to refer to. So for that reason, and this is unusual, it's our current practice. Normally, we insist on a cite to a federal statute, and then we might put the short title in brackets after that. Here, all that was enacted was the short title, so we're going back to that. It's still going to be a challenge for readers to locate, but it seemed the most minimal way of, at least we're not sending them to the wrong place anymore.
Okay. That's all the questions I have. Are there other questions by the committee? Okay, seeing none. Any final words, Ms. Kurtz?
No.
Okay, I see we have a letter of support from the Department of Law, and it's a zero fiscal note, I'm assuming. Yeah, we're going to set the bill aside probably till the next hearing and just give members an opportunity to scour it. I'm sure everyone will be reaching for their statute books to go over and make sure everything's correct, and we'll probably bring it up at the next meeting. So, yes, Senator.
I think it bears pointing out that the room has two sets of statutes that are outdated.
That's a good point.
So, you know, you're reading from the 2010, and it doesn't appear that this room has the two sets of the 2008, but then I don't see even the updates that were after 2008. You know, so we're way out of date.
Good point.
So I'm just making that point.
The 2010 ones, these are the current ones. These are the most recent published volumes we have, but it appears that they're back there.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, Senator Meyer.
Ask a question. How does your process work? Every year you go through and clean up the
statues? Every year we assign attorneys to read various titles. On a rotating schedule. So every title will get read every few years. And in that process, the attorney notes anything from there's a period missing at the end of the sentence to this reference looks outdated to me. They're expected to go through and check whether the federal laws that's being cited still exist and so forth. Yeah, you just actually sit down and read the statute, seeing whether everything still works, seeing if the references are correct. We also get suggestions from the Department of Law. For instance, the one about the administrative director of courts was something that came from Deborah Baer at the Department of Law. And then we wound up contacting Christine Johnson, who is the administrative director, and getting she was supportive of that change. So, individual attorneys working with the statute sometimes call us. We notice things in working on bills that are out of whack, and we certainly welcome those calls, because we don't see everything, and if we did, there wouldn't be any mistakes at all, but once we find them, we'd prefer to fix them.
Great. Well, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate you doing this, because, when we pass the laws, we think they're correct and perfect and all that, and obviously they're not always, and so it sounds like it's a very detailed and meticulous job that you have to do, but I appreciate you doing that.
Thank you.
Great. Okay, and with that, we're adjourned.
Thank you.